While a lot of you are at home, either working or chilling, there are others who have to continue to work. They have a new term that we're all familiar with by now, essential workers. Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. Yes, essential workers, the people whose work keeps society going, they're valued if you take a look at social media posts. However, things are not all good for low-wage and essential workers in the time of COVID-19. In today's episode, we look at the stresses, burdens, and dangers they face. First up, executive producer Marisa DeMarco has a news rundown of what we know today, Wednesday, April 15th, as of 5 p.m.
The United States has the most confirmed cases of coronavirus in the world, and today that number is over 600,000. Spain is at number two with less than 200,000, according to Al Jazeera. Doctors in the U.S. are trying to find treatments for people with coronavirus and launched 100 human experiments to look at whether experimental drugs, an old malaria medication, or techniques for treating HIV and arthritis will work, the Washington Post reports today. But the paper also reports this work is chaotic and disorganized because of a lack of a national strategy, and that might make it take longer. Clinicians around the world say the virus attacks more than the lungs. It also affects hearts, kidneys, brains, blood, livers, and more. And about a month ago, when the Trump administration was telling people not to worry about wearing masks in public, a White House team was scrambling to find some for senior staff there. That's also in the Post today. In New Mexico, there are 90 more coronavirus patients in hospitals and 22 on ventilators. The state's Department of Health says no one in the state died today because of the virus. The total number of cases is at 1,484. The state Supreme Court rejected a petition to hold the June primary election entirely by mail. Though Secretary of State Maggie Toulouse Oliver pointed out in a news release that you can still apply to vote absentee by mail for the next 49 days. We'll throw up a link on how to do that on this post online at KUNM.org. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
Here with me to talk about workers' rights during the coronavirus pandemic is Marcela Diaz. She is the executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Marcela, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Khalil.
Tell me about the problems you're hearing from low-wage workers who are still out there working.
Well, we are a statewide organization, and so our members are having, you know, they are facing a lot of obstacles in the time of COVID-19, especially as low-wage workers. We're a workers' rights organization, and so we're seeing both for essential workers as well as non-essential workers who have seen dramatic cuts in their hours as well as layoffs, if they've seen layoffs in their families and they're struggling economically and also having to deal with some other issues that we shouldn't be having to deal with in this time, like wage theft. We've had several folks from around the state talk about not being able to get their last paychecks and being told by their employers, we don't have the money to pay you, and you can go and try to get unemployment. So for workers who are documented and are authorized to work in the United States legally, they can apply for unemployment and other benefits through the CARES Act and other federal benefits for folks in this position. But if you are a part of a mixed status, immigrant status family, or you're an undocumented worker, unemployment is not something that you have access to. We're also seeing issues for essential workers. Immigrants are a part of the essential workforce that is still up and running at every level, at every skill level. And so we have talked to many of our members who are afraid to go to work, but who have no other choice. So we've heard from essential workers in grocery stores, in one case, a recycling processing center here in Santa Fe, where they are still very afraid to go to work, want to go into work, but also want to pressure and need their employers to be able to take all of the precautions necessary to keep them safe.
So you're saying that essential workers are going to work under unsafe conditions?
Many essential workers that we've talked to that are immigrant workers feel that there are insufficient safety precautions being taken in their workplace. As we get through this and as we start to rebuild our local and national economy, there are 11 million undocumented immigrants, and they are a part of mixed status families. And so we're talking about millions of families here in our state who have to be a part of that recovery effort, mm-hmm. who are workers, consumers, taxpayers. And so when we talk about public health, when we talk about economic recovery, when we talk about the well-being of all children and neighborhoods and schools and communities, we have to make sure everyone is included. Because if there are whole segments of our community that are excluded from this, that means that everyone suffers. That means that the economy doesn't get jump-started in the way that it should. It means that we're not able to protect the health and safety and well-being of whole communities, because whole communities have been left out. So it's another reason why we need to make sure that these policies are inclusive in the future.
Exactly. You're exactly right. She is Marcela Diaz, Executive Director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Clue.
Reporter Yasmin Khan spoke to two workers today who are struggling during the pandemic. She brings us highlights from those conversations and she translates.
I spoke with Teresa Utreras, who for 14 years has worked at the bakery of a Smith's Food and Drug in Santa Fe. She says her job is the only income her household has during the pandemic, and since she lost her second job washing trucks, her income is about $1,000 per month less than normal.
Aquí también quitaron las horas. Sí, me dieron un estímulo de momentáneamente, dijeron que $2 de aumento.
Yes, they gave me a temporary stimulus raise of $2 an hour while we passed through this crisis. But as they gave us a raise, they also cut our hours. She said she has a daughter at home who depends on her, and if Teresa gets sick, her family would not have an income.
Yo trato de tomar las medidas, lo más que puedo tomar de medidas de precaución, más limpieza.
I'm trying to take all the precautions to be cleaner, to have more distance between people, seeing my friends less, all the minimum contact in my personal life. She said the biggest issue is that even though her work gives her a mask and gloves, many customers don't wear masks, and they complain when she distances herself. She said people are getting angry that they aren't getting the same personal attention that they are accustomed to.
Que nos enfocáramos como en hacer una obligación, que la gente que fuera a las tiendas, por favor, llevaran sus máscaras, que fueran más precavidos, que tomaran en cuenta que uno tiene familia, que uno está más expuesto, no a una sola persona, a muchísimas personas.
Let's focus on making it an obligation that people coming into stores wear their masks and that they understand that we have families, that we are more exposed and we're not alone. There are many people who are being exposed. People need to take precautions to help protect us and to protect themselves. I would like that the stores oblige people to wear masks and don't come into the store with more than one person, something like that. I spoke with Lucy Hernandez, a childcare worker in an Albuquerque childcare center funded by the New Mexico Children, Youth, and Families Department. Lucy said although her work is considered essential during the pandemic, her hours have dropped from 5 to 8 hours per day to 1.5 to 2 hours a few days a week. At $10 an hour, she said she can barely pay her rent. 6 of the 8 women who work with her have been laid off. For this to work, they need to pay the child care workers $15 an hour. That would really help us. Lucy said she and other women working at the center aren't eligible for unemployment or the government stimulus check.
Desafortunadamente no, porque no califico para recibir un cheque del gobierno que debería, porque mis impuestos cada año.
No, unfortunately no, because I don't qualify for the check from the government, but I should. Lucy said she and her family are following all government recommendations to stay safe at home, and Lucy washes her clothes and showers when she returns home from work. However, no matter what measure she takes, Lucy said she's afraid of coming into contact with an asymptomatic person or someone who could unwittingly pass the virus to her, and that she could pass it to her family or to the children at her work. We are risking our health and the health of our families during this situation to be able to contribute to the community with our work and to help the community be healthy. But the community is not healthy now, and neither are our families. We have to return home after work, and we don't know what condition our health is in when we get home to our families. Lucy said she would like to have a mask for work, but that her supervisor said they can't find any for the women working at the center.
Thank you so much to Yasmin Khan for that reporting. To get a closer understanding of how this is affecting immigrant workers, I'm here again with my good friend Marian Mendez Serra. She is with El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. Marian, thanks for being with me again.
Thanks for inviting me back.
Let me ask you about worker exploitation. It seems that under these circumstances, people who aren't documented, who necessarily cannot go to the authorities to say that they're being exploited, what are the chances for them to be exploited by their employers?
Well, you see, Kelly, even before this pandemic, the chances of a worker speaking up, it was really hard because there's so many things at risk. And when a worker is trying to affirm their rights, trying to tell their employer, you know, I was $100 short, where's my entire check? Or, you know what, I'm feeling sick, I need to take a day off. There's not a level playing field about talking about workers' conditions. And when we have a dynamic of power at work, then it creates a type of environment in which it can't lead to exploitation. When we're talking about now low-wage workers that are essential workers that are in the front lines providing vital services while at risk of their own health during this crisis to keep us safe and healthy. We should be striving for all workers, our low-wage workers and social workers, to have access to things like paid time off, paid sick leave, to livable wages, to healthy work environments. I think more than ever, when we're talking about lessening the curve, how do we move forward and prosper as New Mexicans, we really need to be paying attention into how our workforce looks like and what are our workers feeling. And the realities are is that our workers continue to experience wage theft. Our workers continue to experience discrimination. We're talking about workers that are in a space of exploitation, that are literally having to live through those uncertain times because they need to put food at the table and they need to be able to have a roof. They need to be able to pay their bills. And this is the type of question that we all in New Mexico are having, right?
And have you heard of any particularly bad situations where people have been exploited?
We keep hearing of these things happening. It has not stopped. You hear it all over New Mexico. And the reality is that workers continue to live through these uncertain times. Having someone in our community that is going through wage theft, exploitation, or discrimination should be a matter of what is going on, and it should be our main priority to ensure that this does not continue to happen. It takes all of us to lessen this curve. It takes all of us to ensure that we rebuild our economy. And if we have essential workers being exploited, if we have essential workers not even getting livable wages, then we have a problem.
I want to thank you again for coming on to the show. She is Marian Mendez Serra from El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. Thank you again for all the work that you're doing, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Khalil.
This is Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. Every weekday, we're covering the way the virus and health measures are impacting people differently around the state. Stay tuned in weeknights at 7:30 p.m. And as always, we want to cover what is happening with you. We're nearly a month into social distancing. Tell us how this time has affected you. Leave us a message and we could roll it into our shows next week. Call 505-218-7084 and share your story or email yournmgov@gmail.com. I'm on the line with Stephanie Welsh. She is the Director of Workers' Rights for the New Mexico Center of Law and Poverty. Stephanie, thanks for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So much of this conversation has been about how isolated people feel in their homes. But plenty of folks are still out there working. What problems are low-wage workers who still have to go to work having despite the dangers? What are they facing right now?
People who are doing this essential work that has always been essential are now exposed to the dangers that the rest of us are sheltering from in our homes. A lot of workers don't have the protective equipment that they think they need to do their job. Their workplaces aren't being sanitized. They don't have access to water to wash their hands regularly. They're not being kept far enough away from their coworkers. Mm-hmm. And some workers are complaining to us that they have been told by their doctor that they should stay at home, but their employer is refusing to allow them to take leave and insisting that they work.
So how does this work? These are essential workers. The government is like, hey, these places can stay open because these people are essential. Yet the employers are refusing or hesitant to make the necessary adjustments so these people can work. That does not make sense to me.
A government order insisting that someone be treated as essential and valued isn't going to change employers' behavior unless it's enforced. Mm-hmm. And employers have to be made to provide the necessary protection for their workers.
I haven't heard anything of any type of government entities trying to enforce these measures. What do you see the big picture coming from this?
So the pandemic has revealed how our policies don't protect us. So many of these members of our community doing this work don't have access to paid sick leave in regular times, and they need it. People who are serving food to other people, people who are caring for older people, should have access to paid leave so that they can afford to stay home and heal when they're sick. And that was a problem before this pandemic. It's a problem now, and it will be a problem after unless our policies change.
Some folks who can't access unemployment or get stimulus money, they have to work. How does that increase the possibility for worker exploitation under those conditions?
Workers who don't have the option to not work will be more willing to work for even lower pay or for the hope of eventual pay and be even more vulnerable to exploitation from their employers.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's been a very popular meme on social media is the same people you deem essential now are the same people you felt shouldn't get $15 an hour for minimum wage. What type of changes are needed to be made, and what type of changes do you think are likely to happen?
These workers have always been essential. It helps to have that recognized for once now during this moment, and that recognition should last past this moment. All workers need to be treated fairly and with dignity and to be paid wages that allow them to support themselves and their family. And all workers need to be allowed to take time off and heal when they need it or when they need to care for their family members. And that was true before, and it will be true after. This pandemic has exposed how dire the risks are we all face when we don't have those kinds of policies and recognitions of the value of work.
She is the Director of Workers' Rights for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, Stephanie Welsh. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
For even the most diligent social distancers, grocery stores remain a fairly unavoidable regular outing. With that has come for many a newfound appreciation for the importance of grocery store employees and the services they provide. KUNM's Nash Jones caught up with Liz Coyle, the head cashier at a Sprouts Farmers Market in Las Cruces, to talk about that and what it's like being on the front lines of food during the pandemic.
First of all, how are you doing? Has anyone in your family or your workplace been impacted by COVID-19, gotten sick or anything like that?
As of right now, everyone that I know and all my family are all fine. A bunch of them are actually staying home. So I'm one of, I think, two of my family who actually are still going to work right now.
What has it been like at Sprouts lately? Are you seeing a lot of panic buying or customers generally pretty reasonable?
Yeah. So initially, like the week before and the week of the announcement, there was like a huge panic buy for a couple of days in a row, maybe a whole week. I've worked at Walmart historically, and I would liken it to a Black Friday is what it felt like. But Sprouts is primarily based on produce. Like, that's our big seller. So we actually get smaller trucks more regularly than most other grocery stores. And so we filled our holds a lot faster than a lot of other stores in town. So we've been steady since then.
How has the atmosphere changed? What does it feel like to be at the register these days?
Just the last 2 weeks, I think, we've had to wear masks and gloves. That has changed things. Our customers are generally like very polite, but I definitely notice that there's a lot of tension. Like, a lot of them will like clear their throats and say, I've got allergies, you know, or they feel the need to explain themselves if they have any kind of cough or anything.
Right. They see people side-eyeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so stuff like that. And then it's unusual to have people be so interactive with me. I feel like a lot more people are willing to have extended conversations, and they've gotten a lot more political than they've been historically.
How so?
So, for instance, a week ago, we instituted a policy where we limited the number of people. And one of the things that happened is a woman at the front of the line expressed some opinion like 30,000 people die of the flu every year. And the man behind her heard her and picked up that conversation. And they had like an argument that I was a little worried would escalate, but luckily it did not. But I get a lot of comments like that, either people saying that they feel that we're overreacting or underreacting to COVID itself.
And so in terms of the store's reactions, I know you mentioned masks and gloves and limiting capacity. What else are your managers doing to keep you all safe? Are you feeling supported by the company?
The things that have been put in place specifically for this are enforcing 6-foot distances on the registers. They've put up a little plexiglass barrier, although I would say it was hastily constructed and that caused it to be less effective than maybe it could have been.
Because it's rickety or what's wrong with it?
It's small. It's very small. It only covers the area directly behind the monitor, but on either side, I can easily like reach around it. And they still pay in cash on a regular basis. So on some level, I feel like we're still very much interacting more than is really appropriate at this point, considering how much asymptomatic spread I've heard is occurring.
And so when our listeners go out for the next food shop, what do you want them to keep in mind as they interact with clerks and other essential workers at the grocery store?
Yes, I would like them to remember that we aren't making the rules. The people who are telling you the rules are never the ones making them. So we're trying our best with being able to bag and stuff for them. And also, 6 feet is further away than you think. People often think that they're standing 6 feet away, but they're usually within 3 feet of you. And if I step away, they tend to follow me. So customers are frequently standing very close to not just each other, but especially to my coworkers.
Anything else that comes to mind?
I've heard a lot of people say, like, thank you so much for coming out. I know it's feeling dangerous right now. And that's really nice. We appreciate being recognized that way.
Well, thank you so much, Liz. I appreciate it. And I hope you have a nice evening.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for talking to me, Nash. You have a good one.
All right. You too.
I recently spoke to an employee of Whole Foods who didn't want to be identified. They mentioned the precautions the store is taking to keep people safe and healthy. Plexiglass shields at the cash registers, a cleaning crew, persistently disinfecting surfaces, and employees get their temperatures checked upon their arrival. They said they felt like it's good PR for the corporate office. I asked why. They mentioned that the employees have to lobby their colleagues to donate their sick leave time instead of the corporate office giving them more. They said they have faith in store leadership, but their faith in the corporate office has lessened. The state's list of essential businesses that can stay open includes mechanics and auto parts stores. KUNM's Nash Jones also talked to Dorian Jude, an employee of SafeLight Auto Glass in Las Cruces, about continuing to work during the coronavirus outbreak.
Can you tell me about what you do on the job day to day?
I'm what's called a mobile technician, and I am the person that goes to your house or to your workplace or to wherever you're at in the moment. I replace the windshield when it's broken, or I repair the little chip in the glass.
How have things been different at work since the pandemic hit?
It's been just a weird kind of roller coaster, really. Our president for SafeLight kind of took an early stance, and they started with limiting not necessarily how many people could be in the office, but they really started with keeping everything clean. For us that are mobile, it was pretty early on, like, please remember to use your gloves, which we have to use anyways because we use chemicals. A little bit more frequent changing of the gloves, especially when you're touching customers' cars. My operations manager very early on got us all hand sanitizer dispensers. We put them in our vans, our mobile vans. Even then, sanitizing wipes and all that, we have a bunch of those that he passed out. Just recently, they came out stating that we had to have masks for when we go out to customers' houses and whatnot. They did say, make your own, buy your own, something like that. But my operations manager, I guess, I don't know how he found them, but he had a bunch of them that he sent out to us in N95 masks.
Do you feel like your bosses are doing enough to protect you and your coworkers?
I think they're doing as much as can be done right now.
Do you feel fairly compensated for the essential services that you're providing folks?
I feel like that's kind of a loaded question because as far as an employee of an auto glass company, we're already pretty well paid. I mean, everyone believes that they could be paid better. Is capable of doing this. It does feel like sometimes during this time of need, there could be more to go around. But at the same time, if no one's out there getting their windshields changed out and SafeLight's not making any money, how are they at all going to be able to pay us without making any money themselves? So it's kind of a catch-22 on that one.
Can I ask what went into your decision to continue working during the stay-at-home order? Did you feel like you had a choice?
I actually was given a choice. It was really early on in March when my direct manager asked me, like, hey, would you like to be sent home for a little while, you know, not work, but still have your health insurance? I said, I don't know, man. I don't know the logistics of that. I had just moved into a house with my girlfriend. And really, if I was to try to rely on one income, this house would not be something that we'd be capable of doing. So I kind of made that decision that, like, I don't feel comfortable just yet staying at home, you know, with my girlfriend being the only person bringing in any money to the house. I said, you know, let's just keep trying to work because we're still doing pretty well as far as business day to day. That has changed. In the last week or two, we have seen a lot less business, but we've already sent a couple people home for a little while. That was definitely a question that was asked of them, not something that was forced on them.
Do you have concerns about layoffs?
Yeah, I kind of do. If it comes down to it, I feel like I could take a little bit of time off and be okay. But I like what I do, and I kind of like to keep doing it.
Is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd want to make sure that you share with me?
I know that everyone gets up in arms about, you know, whether they're essential or not. As far as I'm concerned, there is no essential or not. Everyone is essential.
Thank you so much for your time, Dorian. I really appreciate you speaking with me today.
Well, thank you for having me on.
You will want to tune in tomorrow when YNMG takes a look at race and COVID-19. New data is showing the virus is doing more damage to black and brown communities in the United States. The pandemic is showing the gaps in healthcare, employment, access to quality food, as well as access to information. And let's not forget the overly racist attacks on the Asian community. In short, the problems of racial disparity and racism in this country are laid bare during the pandemic. Tomorrow, we dig in. YNMG at 7:30 p.m. Resources, resources, resources. Find the full list of the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/YNMG Hub. Have you experienced a short check, wage theft? You can call the Federal Department of Labor, the State's Department of Workforce Solutions, or Albuquerque's Legal Department. We'll put direct links to all of these and phone numbers on this post on KUNM.org. We'll also add links for people who are experiencing discrimination, harassment, unsafe working conditions, injuries, or retaliation for speaking up. Head to KUNM.org. Or the NM Center of Law and Poverty is ready to hear your claims about unsafe conditions and wage theft, too. Head to their website, nmpovertylaw.org, or call them at 505-255-2840. You can find advocates and help at Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Head to their site, somosunpueblounido.org. They have offices in Santa Fe, Roswell, and Hobbs. El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos is ready to help. Head to elcentronm.org. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. It's produced by yours truly. News update by Marisa DeMarco. Many thanks to the team at KUNM and New Mexico PBS, Yasmin Khan and Nash Jones for their great contributions. Big ups to Bryce Dix, Ty Bannerman, and news director Hannah Colton for putting in the editing work. Theme music is by Pope Yes Yes Y'all. Hear us all week long on KUNM's airwaves at 7:30 p.m. Online, find this show on KUNM.org or subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation and the New Mexico Local News Fund. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil Ekolona. Thanks for listening.